Then we have a series we call stress tests. What do we mean by stress? What are we stressing? I feel stressed. Dr. Heyman, I don't want to take this midterm. Is that what we're talking about? No. What are we talking about? What kind of test? Stress what? The heart. So what we're doing is we're putting stress on the heart. And then we're seeing how it does. So there's two ways we can stress the heart. What are they? Okay, one is we can exercise the heart. The other is we can administer a drug that will increase either contraction or heart rate. So one of the major drugs that we would use for that is dobutamine. So when we say a stress test, if it's an exercise treadmill or a treadmill test, they're going to walk on a treadmill until they get their heart rate up to a certain level, and then we're going to measure them for whatever we're looking for. If they can't go on the exercise that long, maybe they've got bad knees, maybe they've got maybe they've got an amputated leg, maybe they have trouble walking, whatever it is, they can't tolerate the treadmill. Then we can give them drugs that will either raise their heart rate or increase contractility. Now, what do all three things do? Either the treadmill or the drugs. What do those do ultimately to the heart? They put more stress on it. How do they stress the heart? They make it pump more. Now, when the heart pumps more, what does it need? It needs more oxygen. So when we say stress test, you want to put right down next to that, increased oxygen demand. So we're going to increase the amount of oxygen the heart needs to pump, or needs in order to do its job. Now, there's a couple things we can look for. The first one is just called the exercise treadmill test. And right next to here, you can write ECG. So what we do is we hook the person up to an ECG machine, we put them on the treadmill, and when their heart gets to the right speed, or the right heart rate, then we're going to look to see if they have ECG changes. The next one is called a stress echo. So in a stress echo, you're going to have them exercise the heart, stress the heart, and then what we're going to do is we're going to do an echocardiogram. And what changes do you think we might see if they're having heart problems? What do we say happened in a heart attack? Decreased blood flow to the heart, which causes the heart to beat differently, not as well. So what we're looking for in a stress echo is you're looking for the heart to beat abnormally. Usually what we call it is a hypoactive wall. The heart wall will beat hypoactively. And that's a sign that the heart is not getting enough oxygen. Say that again? Usually they are, but they're not necessarily monitoring it the whole time. Right. They'll do a baseline, and then they'll do it at the end. Dobutamine stress echo, same thing, but you're injecting them instead of making them walk on a treadmill. Then we have what we call thallium stress test. Now, thallium is nuclear. We're going to use a nuclear isotope that gets absorbed by the heart. Now, if we exercise someone and their heart is all pumping and needing lots of oxygen, and then we inject them with thallium, what are we looking for? What do we say we're looking for with nuclear medicine tests? We use isotopes. What we look for? Hot spots and cold spots. Now, in this case, what we're looking for is cold spots. What would a cold spot be a sign of in the heart? Not necessarily dead tissue. What we're looking for in this case would be ischemia, areas that the thallium just isn't getting to. The heart isn't taking it up because it's not getting there because blood flow is slow. It's areas of ischemia where there's less blood flow.
And that's
Right. That's yeah. So you run on the treadmill, and then they put the thallium in into your veins. Right. And so what they're going to do is going to see where that thallium gets absorbed. And if there's dark spots in the heart, those are places that thallium's not getting to. And the reason the thallium wouldn't be getting there is because there's less blood flow to that area. So all of these stress tests, they all work by increasing. But what are they doing? Oxygen demand. They're increasing oxygen demand on the heart, and what they're doing is they're comparing that to oxygen supply. All right, now let's imagine for a moment. Do you know anyone who's just kind of calm and easygoing? Now, it's easy for people to be calm and easygoing when there's nothing bad happening, right? But what happens when you jiggle them a bit? And you give them a little bit of a bad day, and you give them some bad news, and you start poking them. Do they stay calm, or do they start becoming irritated? Okay. So same thing with the heart. It's easy for your heart to do okay when there's no stress, when everything's just easy going. But when you put a little bit of stress on the heart, does it still do okay, or do you start revealing problems? And that's what we're doing with the stress test. Is we're like, well, it's okay now, but when we put it under some stress, then it starts to break. So we're looking for, ultimately, is heart disease. What kind of heart disease? Ischemic heart disease. And what is ischemia? Reduced blood flow. And what's the number one cause of ischemia in the heart? Atherosclerosis. All right. And then the last thing we can do is what's called the cath lab. Now, the cath lab is a place. It's not actually a test. And it stands for catheter lab. What is a catheter? Okay, they do use them to help a person urinate. A catheter is any tube that goes inside another tube. So in a urinary catheter, it's a tube that goes inside the urethra. In the case of a heart catheter, what we're going to do is we're going to put them down on a special table. So they're laying down on a special table. And then we're going to take a long catheter, and we're going to stick them in their femoral artery. We're going to run that catheter through that artery all the way up the aorta, iliac, aorta, all the way up into the coronary arteries. And then we're going to do one of two things. We can either inject dye and take a picture of that. We call it an angiogram. Or at the end of that little catheter tip, we can have an ultrasound wand, and we can take ultrasounds of their arteries. Now, that ultrasound is really only used for research because it takes a long time, because you have to put the ultrasound down every single artery you want to measure. With the dye, you just put it in at the top, and it just spreads throughout the whole thing. When I say the whole thing, the whole what thing? Heart what? Heart circulation. What's the circulation of the heart called? Coronary. So what we do is put it at the top of the coronary circulation, and it go and spread through the whole thing. So that's pretty quick. Now, the cath lab can do other things. They can fix some problems in the heart. And we'll talk about those next semester.
That's where they do
right, that's where they do angioplasties.
The cold spot looks dark?
Yes, cold spots are dark.
And what is the hot spot?
Hot spot is like white or bright. Okay, that's it for heart. Okay, scopes. We have endoscopy, colonoscopy, bronchoscopy, cystoscopy, and arthroscopy. Anytime you see the word scopy, you're going to think camera. Camera on a tube. Kind of like a periscope. So a colonoscope is going to go in the colon. A bronchoscope is going to go into the bronchi. A cystoscope is going to go into the cyst. And what is the biggest cyst in your body? The bladder. Cystoscopy is a sticking a scope through the urethra into the bladder. And then we have arthroscopy, which is sticking a camera into a joint. Arthro is joint. When it, they typically will do it for like joint surgeries, see if there's any problems with cartilage, and then sometimes they can actually fix some of the problems through the scope. Then we also have endoscopy, which is where we swallow the camera. So it goes down, looks at the esophagus and stomach. All right, so those are the big scopes. In addition to the camera part of the scope where we look, usually the scopes will also have little jaws on them, and they can be used to take tissue samples or biopsies. So if we put a colonoscope up someone's butt, we might see polyps. And we can actually use the little chomper on it to grab those polyps and rip them off. Then we can study those polyps under the microscope and see if they're cancer.
Do they carry it? Or just
yeah.
Rip it off and drop it?
No, it rips it off and it pulls it back.
Yeah. How many?
I don't know. In a bronchoscope, you can actually take a little tissue of the bronchi and examine that to see if there's cancer in the lung, or what type of cancer, or you know. If there's a strange infection that we can't quite figure out, you could actually take a sample of that. Specimens. A tissue specimen is called a biopsy. It's a sample of living tissue. Now, the word biopsy is a little bit confusing sometimes, because a biopsy can be used to refer to taking the whole abnormal part of the tissue, or it can be used for just taking a sample. So, like, for example, if they say we did a breast biopsy, that could mean we went in and we removed whatever the lump was, or it could mean we went in and we just took a piece of the lump. You don't know which one it is, but it could mean either one. The word cytology means cell study, cell study. So what we're going to do is we're going to take our biopsy and we're going to smear it onto a slide, and then we're going to look at it under a microscope. And we can look for various different things. We can look for changes in the cells, which might be indicative of cancer or precancer. We can also look for morphological changes and some other stuff. But the major reason we would do cytology is to look for cancer. A culture. A culture is when we take a sample of tissue and then we try and grow stuff out of it. Typically what we're looking for is infection in that case. Now, in addition to actually growing it and seeing what comes out, we can also do what's called a sensitivity. And that's where we test it against different antibiotics or substances and see what kills it the best. So that would be called a culture and sensitivity, or for short, C&S. All right, now there are two things that I forgot to put on the slides here that we need to talk about briefly. One is MRIs and MRAs. MR stands for magnetic resonance. And what we use magnetic waves to take pictures of soft tissue. It's going to give you a 3D image, just like a CT scan. And MRA stands for magnetic resonance angiogram. It's the exact same thing, except instead of looking at tissues, we're looking at arteries. It's now the gold standard for evaluating strokes. The next thing you need to put down is fluoroscopy. F-L-U-O-R-O, scopy. Now, a fluoroscope is not a scope in the traditional sense of the word. It's not a camera that we put into a person. What it is a moving X-ray. So when they do an angiogram and they inject dye and watch where it goes in the heart, what they're doing is they're doing it on a fluoroscope. So rather than having a picture that's recorded on a film, it's on a little TV screen, and they can record a video of the whole thing. So you see it through time. That's the major thing about a fluoroscope. Another one that you might see occasionally is called a PET scan, which stands for positron emission scan. Positron emission tomography scan. And a PET scan measures metabolic activity. It's a measurement of how active that tissue is. And it's usually used to detect cancer. And now they're also beginning to use it to diagnose Alzheimer's disease. But it's mostly research. It's kind of hard to get insurance companies to pay for them. Oh, right. That's it. Any questions?